but as we continue to see growth throughout the world, this has to be a diplomatic and democratic institution that we end up running, because we represent everybody at the end of the day. And that includes anybody from the amateur level to the professional level. And again, our dream is to see pickleball across the world. So as much as the United States has been an instigator of growth, and they've done a great job implementing rules and regulations and testing and throwing out ideas and growing the sport, we eventually will move to voting by member countries.
Welcome back to the Future of Pickleball. I'm your host, Paul Olson. We do this on the Selkirk TV channel, trying to bring the best information we can about what's going on in the world of pickleball. I generally get an opportunity to speak with our domestic leaders, drivers, the people that are leading the sport of pickleball, and today we're taking that global. On this show, we're going to call this the episode from Selkirk World. This is where we're going to get a chance to talk to a leader from South America in Chile. And Chandler is also the board member of the GPF and the attorney that has organized an awful lot of the GPF. I can't wait to get our conversation started. Chandler, welcome to the show.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Cool. Well, this is really fun. First of all, when we're in our little global worlds, where am I talking to you from right now?
Today, I'm in Santiago, Chile. So Southern Hemisphere, technically winter here, but I'm still getting a little bit of sun, so I'm happy.
tell me about how you got into pickleball and how you don't speak with a heavy Spanish accent, so I'm guessing maybe you're not. Tell us how you got to Santiago and how this whole thing came about.
Sure. So I don't know if you'd believe me if I told you that I actually played pickleball in high school gym class, circa 2007, 2008, wooden paddles and all. It's a little bit different than the pickleball that we tend to see today. But I was born and raised in Indianapolis, Indiana, grew up in the United States, played mostly volleyball. So I ended up actually kind of forgetting about that pickleball experience in gym class, played as a high performance athlete, D1, D2 volleyball, moved to South America where life and work took me, and was introduced to the sport of paddle. Not sure if you've heard about it, some say padel, but it's another fast-growing racket sport internationally. Fell in love with it, started training. But every time I went back to visit my family in the United States, who had moved to Naples by then, there were not any paddle courts. There was a buzz in the air of pickleball. And left and right, wherever I went, you couldn't ignore pickleball in the pickleball capital of the world, right? So I jumped on the courts and just took to it immediately, and the rest is history.
How fun. You know, something that has been so interesting as we go along here, and certainly with a newer sport, and where so many of the leaders in our sport are people from other backgrounds, as opposed to having born and raised, you know, like a tennis player would come up from the time they were a little kid and had been embraced in it their entire life. Something that I think is going to be kind of cool, guide us a little bit as to how you chose to move into the pickleball world in Chile, as opposed to simply being a player.
Yeah, I think through my experience with paddle, and I'm really close to the paddle community still within Chile, I ended up becoming involved with the USA team of paddle, and then eventually with the USPA, which is the Paddle Association, through the Standards and Ethics Committee. Just through that past experience and my life experience in both sports and law, I saw an opportunity to do something and really better the sport. I think in pickleball, it's unique that it was invented in the 60s, right? But we have an opportunity now to lay the foundation for governance, in good governance. So I just, using my background, wanted to offer my services and reached out, and that's how I really got into where I'm at today.
Cool. Give us a little bit of an idea as to what's going on specifically with pickleball in Chile. We hear things about all the different corners of the world. Chile, we'd love to know what the details, what's happening, how many players you've got, how many facilities, the details.
Sure. Yeah. It's still a small sport in Chile. I'd say we've seen a lot of movement, but recently over the past year, we do not yet have an official federation, but that's because Chile is very specific in the legal requirements needed, the stipulations that they put by law that you have to comply with prior to actually forming the federation. We did make a significant advancement within the past 2 years. Two good friends, Tobias and Terry, actually got pickleball recognized as an official sport by the Ministry of Sport in Chile. So that was a first initial step that had to be taken. After that, now we're in the process of creating three clubs. They're called Clubes Deportivos. By law, it's groups of 15 people that play the sport. You have to form these clubs. They have to be recognized prior to actually applying for federation status. So we're at that step right now. Player-wise, we have a good tight-knit community of about 300 people. It's growing every day, really. We have people jumping into our WhatsApp chats. Clubs in Santiago, we have, I would say, yeah, four clubs in Santiago, one about 4 hours north of here, at least two in the south. But within the past month, we have heard at least like two to three clubs in the pipeline. So paddle in Chile is the monster, I'd say, for the moment. It's a country of 19.8 million people approximately, but we have around 30,000 people playing paddle. And that's a good thing, Paul. I say that's a good thing because I don't see it as competition. I see that there's more people than ever playing a racket sport, and that's a very easy transition into pickleball. So we have peak interest in racket sports, and we have people paying attention to what's going on in the United States. And I think that there's definitely going to be major interest, lots of space to continue growing here.
That's really interesting to hear. One of the things that, as I talk to different global leaders, sometimes the demographics shift a little bit from the classic way it's done in the US. What is the player demographic that you guys are seeing showing interest in Chile?
Everybody. I mean, you're seeing kids from 7 years old to seniors that are playing, up to 80 years old. Their tennis is very strong in Chile as well. So between tennis and paddle, racket sports overall, you have people that really are drawn to pickleball. It's just so attractive. It's so inclusive and it's social and fun. So the demographic really, it's something you can do with your family. You can not only just play with your family and have fun, you can actually compete, kids versus the parents, and it's a good game, right? Which is something so unique to pickleball.
I'll tell you, folks, if you're watching this, if you like what you're seeing and you like the kind of guests that I gotta get on here, hit the like and subscribe buttons, hit the notification bell, and find out when these shows come out first thing. I want to segue now a little bit, Chandler, if we can. This business about the GPF and that is the Global Pickleball Federation, and I know that you've been an instrumental part of that and you're a board member. The fact that you're an attorney has really revved my engine because we have so many rumors. We have so many people with opinions. I like talking to somebody that actually has some substance to their opinions. But tell me about how you got involved with the GPF.
Yeah, I think the GPF has been on my radar, was on my radar since its inception. So I actually reached out directly to the GPF, Ruth Rosenquist, who I believe fellow at-large board member, avid pickleball player, and communications extraordinaire, to understand what the GPF was all about and what direction they were headed in. And after speaking with her, it was clear to me that it was something that I would love to be a part of. So applied for the board position, and ever since then have just basically volunteering, lending services and expertise in any way that I can.
And you mentioned Ruth Rosenquist, who I have come to know quite well. We actually live in the greater Phoenix area, different parts of it, but I see a fair amount of Ruth. And then, of course, she's so involved in things going on globally. She had mentioned to me that one of the things that she was impressed with you is the fact that being an attorney, you have to approach things differently than those of us that have our thoughts and our ideas, and we can just spew them at will. you're in a little different situation with the governance in Chile and then the governance of the way the GPF is being set up. Tell us a little bit more from your perspective what that's about.
Yeah, I think the number one thing that they teach us in law school is cite your source, right? So in addition to the ability to quickly analyze large documents such as the Olympic Charter or complicated contracts, things of that sort, really we have to look. We can't just offer an opinion and throw it out there because it's what we want to say or what we want to happen. We have to look to the source. And in this case, good governance and where that comes from and our beacon of light, right, is the Olympic Charter. And the Olympic Charter, in a certain sense, you referred to rumors earlier, terms that are being thrown around, maybe used for a specific purpose, but really those terms are very open-ended and generic. They're found in the Olympic Charter, but they're open-ended for interpretation. And we have to decide how we take and use that and how we apply the criteria to create good governance as an international federation.
And on the governance side of things, one of the things that I get into a lot of conversations with people around the world in terms of what their thoughts are or what their association is or how they see themselves moving into the global community, what are the foundations that are going on with the GPF that you think are setting the stage for it to become the governing body that can really serve every continent on Earth?
Sure. First, that's our dream, is to bring pickleball to the world. So both at a grassroots to a professional level, that's our founding principle, really, so to speak. And then on an organizational perspective or side of things, we've set ourselves up to be not only diverse with representation from across the world, but member run, essentially. The idea is to move to where our member national federations are making the decisions to continue advancing and growing pickleball as we move along towards, hopefully, IOC recognition in the future.
You know, you mentioned the IOC, and one of the terms that I've heard spoken about quite a bit is IOC compliance. Could you tell me or explain to me what that actually means and what the goals and objectives of IOC compliance are?
Sure. That's a really great question. It's a hot topic, I'd say, right now. It's another term that we've heard thrown around, but we're not really sure sometimes what that means. What does that involve, right? So I would say IOC compliance, Olympic compliance, is about ensuring that your rules, regulations, the structure of your governing body all fall in accordance with what's found in the Olympic Charter. It's also about implementing WADA anti-doping measures. And lastly, the implementation of the Olympic prevention of manipulation of competition, which is also known as match fixing. Sure. Other than that, as long as you satisfy what's found in the Olympic Charter and comply with those values, the rest is open-ended. The IFs are given autonomy and independence in how they are ultimately governed, as long as everything falls in line with what's found in the charter.
So then in IFs, your international federations. Now, one of the things in the governance and in the structure of your organization, I've had people ask me or question me or see if I knew about how is the countries of the world represented in a global federation or in the GPF specifically? How is it represented? How is the board set up? How is all of the different countries around the world interests represented in the GPF?
Sure. So by design, we're a democratic institution that at present has over 50 member countries. That number continues to grow, I'd say, weekly, as we see more and more countries continue to form their national federations. So currently we have 14 seated board members, with the option to seat one more board member, with representation from across the world, from Africa to Canada to Australia, down to South America. And right now we started with an appointed board of experts in the field to get the ball rolling and lay the foundation. But as we move along, by November of 2025, when we hold our first annual Congress, by that point, our members will be able to vote, right? So an elected board will assume their new duties and role on January 1st of 2026. And so through that participation and our interaction and constant feedback that we get from not only the national federation, but also continental federations, we all work together to continue advancing the sport.
Hi, I want to tell you guys about one of the best additions I've got to my game. And it's not another paddle. It's not another shirt, it's my Selkirk tour bag. Selkirk bags are designed with tremendous intent. They're to help you organize, to keep things that you need with you where you can get at them whenever you want them. The beauty of the Selkirk bags is they're designed by a company that really thinks first, last, and always about pickleball. They've created a series of bags at all kinds of price points that are tremendously well designed, and frankly, they look really good. Look at the Selkirk bags, not only for what you do courtside. I use my tour bag as my travel bag when I'm going around the country. Selkirk will help you have the best experience you can have. Enjoy it. Thanks so much. You can find all the bags on Selkirk.com's website. You know, you really struck, I think, on the thread that has come up most often in conversations that I've had, where there seem to be concerns, where the U.S. has been sort of the driver in pickleball. I mean, without question, it's been the biggest thing. I think there's some concerns that it not be able to just dominate the sport globally. Do you have any thoughts or ideas on that particular subject?
Sure. I think without a doubt, USA Pickleball is an incredible leader and historically has been the leader of the sport. But as we continue to see growth throughout the world, this has to be a diplomatic and democratic institution that we end up running, because we represent everybody at the end of the day. And that includes anybody from the amateur level to the professional level. And again, our dream is to see pickleball across the world. So as much as the United States has been an instigator of growth and they've done a great job implementing rules and regulations and testing and throwing out ideas and growing the sport at a grassroots level as well, we eventually will move to voting by member countries. And, you know, that takes us wherever it takes us.
Cool. A couple of things that you had mentioned in your remarks, where you were talking about anti-doping, and I don't think we've really addressed anti-doping in the pickleball space. How will that affect our sport?
Yeah, I mean, ethics is just huge. Good governance, ensuring the integrity of the sport, clean athletes. We've seen it come up this year in Paris with the Chinese swimmer issue. We've actually seen the Olympics pressure the United States Department of Justice to stop investigating. Otherwise, they could possibly lose the potential to host the upcoming Olympics if they don't respect the decision of WADA, right? So this is something that needs to be taken very seriously. It needs to be taken seriously, not only at the international level, but trickle its way down through all the way down to the national federations, because we will have to implement testing procedures, whether it's internalized or externalized, outsourced, so to speak. It must be done. It's an absolute must to ensure the integrity of the sport.
The fact that I don't know what the acronym WADA is, I'm guessing there's probably a few other people maybe that are watching this. What is that acronym?
Yeah, that's the Institution for World Anti-Doping.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Something else that is going to be a little bit different, I think, from my perspective, is in terms of the insanely close gender neutrality that we've got in the game of players, and the fact that mixed doubles is such a huge piece of our sport. There aren't all that many sports that are blending the genders as frequently as we do in pickleball. Will that be a factor in just the overall growth of pickleball worldwide, but also in potentially the Olympic environment?
Most definitely. You hit the nail on the head. It's a huge factor. Some sports they confront difficulties in getting women to participate and having women participation. But as we very well know, we have mixed doubles, on the television. We have high-level athletes playing mixed doubles. We have women's doubles, high level of participation of female athletes. So that's actually a very strong point for pickleball as a whole. And when it comes to IOC recognition, they've really put a spotlight on gender equality. And so pickleball can already come in and say, look, we have this number of female athletes playing at this level, competing internationally. And that's going to be a very strong point in our favor when it comes to applying for IOC recognition.
Now, in IOC recognition, one of the things, I get an interesting opportunity to talk to a variety of different people around the country and around the world that are involved in things. And I've gotten some information that I believe sounds very credible, and that is the fact that the IOC is no longer taking in new sports singularly, that we would have to either come in through the foundations or the badminton table tennis. Is there any reality to that from your perspective?
I haven't heard that before. I think that the Olympics is open to accepting new sports, and they have done so continuously. I mean, if you look today, we have 48 disciplines across 32 sports in the modern Olympics. That's a 41% increase since the Barcelona Games of 1992. So the Olympics is clearly moving in the direction of trying to appeal to a younger demographic and younger crowd. And why is that? It's because they are heavily reliant on ticket sales, not only ticket sales, but media rights and advertising. That's where the majority of their income comes from. So at the end of the day, they have to consider what's going to attract the most amount of viewers, right? Sponsorship, sales, and media. Apart from that, we've seen baseball and softball in the past kind of in and out of the Olympics games, the Olympic games, because of venue size. So venue can also be something that's an impediment, right, to getting into the games. Low viewership. But any new sport that's added to the Olympics has to be widely practiced. Per the charter, you have to have, I believe it's men in 75 countries across four continents and women playing the sport in over 40 countries across three continents. That's a must. I think the Global Pickleball Federation can be key in advancing that. I think we already have done some great work in making that happen and making sure that we're getting rules out translated in different languages, resources available for these countries. We are also sending out pickleball equipment and funding to these countries that need it most, right? So that's going to be crucial. I've seen, if you want to go there right now, I've seen, you know, talk about pickleball being in the Olympics in 2028. That, in my opinion, is not going to happen, unfortunately, because they've already decided what sports are going to be part of the Olympic program in 2028. And besides that, per the Olympic charter, you have to apply 7 years prior to the games. So simple math tells us that, you know, our time is up in that regard, but we can set our sights on 2032.
And I've heard 2032 talked about quite a bit. Could you address sort of the specifics of what that timeline, what that track will be for our sport to legitimately have an opportunity to be part of the 2032 or 2032 Olympics, and what that would look like so those of us that are in the game can kind of pay attention to how those tick marks come off?
Yeah, I think first we need to work on visibility and strengthening the International Federation and making sure we lay the proper foundation, which is exactly what we're doing right now. We have to continuously fall back in anything that we're doing on the good governance principles that come from the Olympic Charter. We have to fully implement the WADA code, which we will, and then eventually move to fully democratic principles with our members voting in a new board. So first things first, take care of good governance. After that, high performance competition in around the world, tournaments around the world, visibility. Again, they want a sport that's widely practiced around the world, right? But as we've seen with boxing, for example, if you don't do it right, there are severe consequences. Mm-hmm. So you have to make sure that you're really doing this correctly from the get-go. Full transparency. Let people know what you're doing. Learn the criteria, follow the criteria, implement it, and good things will happen. So that's exactly where we're at right now.
I think that is, it's so interesting or so enjoyable to hear someone articulate that. The number of times over the last few years I've heard about somebody that had a friend, they knew somebody in the IOC, they were going to make this happen. Guys, really? And so yeah. That is very interesting. With the things that are going on globally, and particularly with the addition of Asia with South America, Africa, and Asia all percolating at different levels and at different rates, that has to be contributing to the overall potential for success.
Most definitely. That's huge. It's going to be a continued driver of success as we see more and more of these countries lay their very own foundations and establish their national federations. And get basically shine the spotlight on the sport over and over again until, it's just a magnet. It really just draws people of all ages, all backgrounds, and that's what's so cool about it.
In that, I had meant to ask you when we were talking about Chile and South America, what other countries in South America are having a growth and expansion in pickleball?
Sure, Peru has been huge, thanks to the Cabiesas brother and sister siblings. I'll say that again, but growth in Peru has been huge thanks to the Cabiesas siblings and Pickleball Peru. They've done a great job at reaching out across the country, even in remote and rural areas, to really grow the sport with children as well in schools. They have hosted the World Cup game. It's an amateur competition, but international. A ton of fun, highly visible, lots of social media action there, which really helped grow the sport in South America. That garnered just a lot of attention through Instagram, Facebook, and talk and hype, media articles and newspapers. Apart from Peru, I would say Brazil, who is also very strong in beach tennis, they're seeing a lot of interest in pickleball. Argentina recently formed its federation, Uruguay as well, Paraguay. So we're seeing interest across the board.
And now, of those, as those different federations come on board, and with you being in South America, is it a presumption that they'll join the GPF and be part of the global scene that way?
The majority of them already have. They've been given membership status. And I think once Chile establishes its federation, we'll follow suit, because we all fall under the PFA, Pickleball Federation of the Americas, and eventually under the GPF as well.
You know, it's kind of interesting as you talk about what's gone on in Peru. I remember being just really shocked, pleasantly shocked, when the African Games were held and we actually had the first demonstration sport of pickleball in an IOC-related activity. The fact that that happened in Africa first is kind of remarkable in the greater scheme of things. And do you see the rest of the world being able to make those kind of contributions on a continental basis, that'll all lead towards the Olympics?
Definitely. Yeah, that was groundbreaking. And I think it really set the stage for what we all need to be looking at doing as well, in our respective areas. Recently in Chile, we had the opportunity to do a clinic through something that I started called Chile Juega Pickleball. And we did that clinic in the Olympic Training Center in Santiago. So some other board members as well, on the GPF board have actually, they've been recognized by their National Olympic Committees already, I believe. So definitely starting to form those relationships, and start just linking Olympics to pickleball. Anything that we can get, to strengthen that relationship and visibility is going to be key to IOC recognition.
You know, one of the things that I think it would be really great for you to kind of make the GPF pitch as to the countries and the associations that are not currently members, what would be your best pitch as to why they should seriously look at saddling up with you guys and getting together to help grow this sport globally?
Sure, Paul. I see the GPF as becoming the leading entity in setting the standards for sports governance and development for all. And that, again, includes from amateur to pro. This is pickleball for the world. Setting the stage for IOC recognition, providing resources and support, to both continental federations and national federations, and hopefully eventually hosting fun international competition. Ensuring the integrity of the sport. We have a great group, a great team of individuals, experts in the field, people that have really been the founders or the pioneers of pickleball across the world. And it's, again, a unique opportunity to really set the stage for what's to come and for the future of pickleball. So I invite everybody to join us in that, to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, check out our webpage, check out our bylaws, and ask us any questions. But yeah, accompany us in this process.
I think that that is, I've been in the sport for quite a while, and the separations and the divisions and different angles that have gone on in the sport, I don't think people realize how divisive that is in terms of what I think most of us are interested in, and that is the acceptance and growth of this amazing game that's come out So I really hope you guys are able to make that leap and to get the few stragglers that are still out there starting to pay close attention and realizing this isn't about you running it. It's about your whole global leadership team running it, and that'll come together. You were mentioning November of 2025 is when your next major board election will be. Will that, if we have gotten to the point that we have 75 countries on the men's side and 40 countries on the women's side, at that time, will that be a triggering point for the official invitation or the request to join the IOC globally?
We could at that point determine if we're in the right position to submit a petition. The petition can be made through the IF. Otherwise, the IOC can directly reach out and request participation as part of the sports program. But first, before we can become part of the sports program, we need to be IOC recognized as a federation. So first things first is going to become IOC recognition of the GPF as the International Federation of Pickleball.
But in that November of 2025 election, will that not be sort of an instrumental moment in terms of you being able to be identified as the global entity?
Sure. If we have enough member countries signed on by that point, we're very hopeful that we will, and we're in a position to make the application. It's a large application. It has to be done properly, hopefully from the get-go. So I think that it could be a very good moment, a defining moment to make that request to the IOC.
So where really the viewership that I get on this show is a lot of people that are really kind of interested in where the sport's really going, what the vision is, and frankly, what the strategies are to get there. For those of us that are deeply involved in the sport, who should we be reaching out to? What can we be doing if we see the GPF vision as being positive to help you guys? What can be the push that we can give from the organic pickleball world?
Sure. I'd say follow along with everything that we're doing on social media. Help support us through supporting your national governing body. I know if you're in the United States and you're listening to this today, supporting USA Pickleball, becoming a USA Pickleball ambassador perhaps, and just leading the grassroots efforts in your local community through that growth, that helps us organically, right? It's exactly what we need to continue thriving and making sure that this sport reaches every corner of the world.
You know, before I start into our sort of segue outro, I want to just let anybody that's watching this realize that we have to thank Selkirk and Selkirk TV for making this channel available for us to be able to have these kind of conversations. The app that is Selkirk TV is invaluable in the sport. It's free, and you'll get these shows, and you actually can see the entire 55 episodes that have been done in the past of people of this magnitude. Take the opportunity to join us. That being said, where my commercial is now done, Chandler, guide me a little bit as to what you see in the, both from a South American perspective, as well as from a global perspective, what you see coming in the next 2, 4, 5 years in the sport of pickleball.
Sure. So what we're seeing and what we will surely continue to see will be exponential growth. I think it could officially win the title of fastest growing sport in the world. And I think the accessibility that it has and its ability to just really let people have fun, jump on and play and compete immediately, no matter what your race, gender, background, religion, socioeconomic status is, that's just so impressive. And it really has been a key factor to the growth that we will continue seeing.
I think that is so cool. I have really enjoyed having this chance to chat with you, girlfriend. This is kind of a cool thing that we're doing.
Thanks so much, Paul.
I'm so excited to see the level of professionalism that is coming into our sport that even a few years ago was very casual. Our casual's gone. I think you've been a great contribution to today's show, and it sounds like you're going to be a great contribution to overall pickleball growth. Chandler Carney, thank you very much. I sure appreciate you being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.